So what I will be speaking about is a joint work with Fabrice Betuel and Gian Domenico Orlandi. So about the parabolic Ginzburg-Landau equation, but we have already had a lot of talks on Ginzburg-Landau equation, so I've not many things left to say except for the result, so I'll try to adopt a kind of a different viewpoint and insist on why we choose a certain kind of initial condition. So I try to focus my talk in this direction. So okay, everybody writes the energy, so I will write the equation to start if you let me doing this. So parabolic Ginzburg-Landau equation okay, and I will be working in Rn, n larger or equal to 2, with an initial condition at time 0 equals u epsilon 0. Okay, so this equation is basically speaking the gradient flow for the Ginzburg-Landau energy. Okay, dx, this is the potential, and this just what is inside. I call it E epsilon of u. So this is the energy density. Energy density. And so the two focuses that I would like to tackle here, the first one is the asymptotic when epsilon goes to 0. Both in space and time. And the second one is why choose a large class of initial conditions, so of u epsilon naught. So this will be more precise in a moment, but that's what usually people refer to well-prepared. So here it will be non-well-prepared prepared initial data. Okay, so to be a little bit more precise, say for the setting, I will assume the following. I'll try to give some motivation afterwards why we want to work with non-well prepared. So the setting, assume that we have a sequence u epsilon positive of solutions. With epsilon going to 0, and an initial energy bound. Which is the following. I assume that the energy, the epsilon of the initial condition, is bounded by a constant times log epsilon. And from the talk of Peter Sternberg or other talk, you may see this as I am working is in the so-called finite vorticity regime. So this is the energy regime in which vorticity is going to appear as measures of finite measures. And so I assume this, and as Etienne said this morning, the energy is decreasing for the parabolic Ginzburg-Landau. So this bound is met at any positive time. So I will look at the following densities mu epsilon t, so these depend on x, and this is just E epsilon, so this is the energy density of the function U epsilon at x times t divided by log epsilon. Okay, so this is a measure on Rn, and because of this assumption, these measures are bounded in L1. Okay, so I can assume, going necessarily to a subsequence, that in the limit mu epsilon t weakly converges in the sense of measure to a limiting measure mu star t. Okay, so I can do this for any positive time. Now there is a little trick that allows me to find a common subsequence which works for all the times, okay? Because a priori there is here I just have a sequence of solutions, so I can just do this for a finite or countable number of times, but you can do this for all the times. And okay, you have this, and you can also define so the space-time measure, which will just be mu star t dt. Okay, and what we will be interested in is, so the issue is regularity properties and evolution of mu star t. Okay. Okay, yes, maybe I should make a remark here about mu star zero. Okay. Usually when people are talking about well-prepared initial data, that would be if I draw a picture, say in dimension two, that would be that maybe you have some finite number of points where your vector fields U looks like vortices, and away from those vortices, say the U is really smooth and you have a bound on its derivatives and so on. But if you just assume, so in this setting, the energy at time zero would be a finite sum of Dirac masses. But if you just assume an energy bound of this kind on the initial data, then mu star zero can be any non-negative Radon measure say with mass with total variation and total variation less than M0. Okay, and how can you see this? Just assume, for example, that mu epsilon zero is of the form e to the I phi epsilon zero, so just a vector of unit length, so a pure phase, say, then the gradient square, you don't have potential part in the energy, the gradient square is equal to a gradient phi. Okay, now phi is a real function. And, okay, yeah. Sorry. I should have said that. So that's Ginzburg-Landau complex case. So U epsilon Okay. So now it's not difficult with a real function to construct a sequence phi epsilon zero, so that this measure, when renormalized by log epsilon, goes, for example, to a constant of a Dirac mass. So when you are able to construct a Dirac mass, you can construct sums of Dirac mass, multiples, and so on. So in the weak limits, by a diagonal argument, you can construct any measure. Okay? So if you just assume an energy bound on the initial data, you can have any non-negative Radon measure as an initial defect measure. So those things that what people usually call either defect measure of concentration of energy measures and so on, whatever you want. Okay, so what is known? I would like to start with dimension two because I will try to motivate this only choice by a possible future extension of results in dimension 2. So what is known in dimension 2? Actually, lots of things. Theorem basically say part is due to Lin in 96, and in the form I will state it. So this one was the first result. It was generalized by Gérard M. Sonner in 98. Actually, it was not formulated the way I will formulate it, but probably now they will formulate it this way. Because I'm going to use tools that he has developed. Assume this. So assume E epsilon U epsilon naught is less than M0 log epsilon. Assume that nu star 0 is equal to a sum of pi sigma I delta A I 0, so I going from 1 to M. Maybe I should say something more. And assume also that the limit as epsilon goes to 0 of the Jacobian, you already heard about these objects, the Jacobian of U epsilon naught is equal, say, take the mass of this, to nu star 0. Okay, then what happens? Okay. Yes, one thing I should say. Here I'm working in Rn. Actually, people that have worked on this in dimension 2 mainly considered the case where you replace Rn by omega and you put a boundary condition J from the boundary of omega into C or into S1, say, and you call D the degree. But this theorem can also be stated in R2 with some modification. Degree of G with respect to the boundary of omega. So omega is simply connected, smooth bounded, blah blah blah. Okay. So if A1 0, AM 0 are distinct points of omega. If, and this was Lin in 96, if sigma I equals plus 1 for all I, or sigma I equals minus 1 for all I, it means either you have all positive vortices or all negative vortices. So this is Gérard Sonner, and this one is more general, but I had to quote the two. So in particular, this implies that M is equal to absolute value of the degree. Okay. If sigma I equals plus or minus 1 for all I, then nu star t is equal to the sum I equals 1 m of pi sigma I delta a I of t, where a I of t satisfies an ODE, which is the following, if I'm not wrong, d dt ai of t equals minus 2 over log epsilon, the gradient with respect to the, say, ai variable of a renormalized energy, a1, am, sigma 1, sigma m. Okay, it also depends on g and on omega. That's not that important. And this is the so-called renormalized energy that was introduced by Brezis, Betuel, and Ella. Renormalized energy. And AI t, AI of 0 is equal to AI 0. Okay, and this is true up to collision. It means this function here is singular when two of the points where two vortices, two of the locations get at the same place. So the theorems all up to the moment where two vortices will collide. Okay, so maybe one first remark I should also state now is that, as you see, there is a log factor here appearing in the ODE, so that vortices don't move in the time scale of the original equation, but in a renormalized time scale, actually, so they move really slowly. Another remark is that, well, in this case, so you should have in mind that two vortices that have the same sign will repel each other, whether if they have different sign, they will attract. So in the case studied by Lin, probably this ODE is a global solution. The vortices will stabilize in the, I don't know, some kind of abricot of lattice or whatever of this kind that people cannot prove. In the other case, if you have different signed vortices, there will be collision. Okay? There will be collision after some time, so that this theorem cannot be used to analyze the evolution after that. And why? The reason is in this condition here, which is actually the fact that the data is well prepared is hidden in this condition. What happens after all? Imagine that you have a plus one vortex and a minus one vortex that comes one against the other. What you would like to say to continue the evolution after collision is, okay, these two vortices are going to cancel each other. Then I just, how would I define the motion afterwards? I just erase those two vortices that collided, and I continue with a new ODE. The problem is the Jacobian is a signed quantity, and the energy is not. So when two vortices are colliding, here you have, say, pi log epsilon energy. Here you also have pi log epsilon energy. You don't know what's happening when they collide. The Jacobians are canceling, so that you don't have any more Jacobian here at the time of collision. Here you don't know. If in order to go on with this theorem, you should know that the energy in this time scale suddenly decreases of 2 pi log epsilon. And this, as far as I know, nobody is able to prove it, so that in the two-dimensional case, the analysis of the evolution is stuck at this point. So maybe a different approach should be to say, okay, I'm not trying to work with this condition, maybe my conclusion will be weaker, but I will be able to describe the evolution in the whole time. So this is mainly one motivation, because you see at that moment where collision appears, you can still, of course, at the epsilon level, you can go on for the flow, but your data is no longer well prepared. So you are just in the setting that I wrote in the start. Okay. So what is known now in three dimension? Yes. So something important. I said there is this 1 over log epsilon time scale. People usually say that's the time scale of the evolution. I would better say that is one of the time scales, because nothing tells us that the remaining part of the energy, the part which is not topological, say, evolves in this time scale also, and you will see later that there is a different time scales for this part. In the three-dimensional case, what happens, things are a little bit easier in some sense because there is just one time scale. Actually, both the topological part and what is left will evolve in the original time scales. And maybe a really easy way to see this, you remember from Peter Stamberg's talk that the energy of a vortex line, is essentially proportional to its length in the unit log epsilon. So the gradient flow of this energy is of the same order, because when you move a line, you change its length. Okay, so the gradient is of the same order of the energy. Whether in the two-dimensional case, the vortices were points, okay? So the length is somehow the cardinality of the number of points is here. And when you move points, you don't change the cardinality. So it's lower order, the interaction. So that's why two time scales come into play. In the three-dimensional case, the good point is that there is just one time scale. Of course, the bad point is that the vortices are now n minus two-dimensional objects and are no longer points. Nevertheless, so what is expected, of course, the gradient flow of length should be mean curvature flow. And this has been proved first in the smooth case. So also another feature is that an ODE, of course, gives you a smooth solution. Mean curvature flow is something which is, of course, really much less known that an ODE. It is known for smooth initial data that it remains smooth for a short time, but generally it develops singularity. Nevertheless, you can assume. So this is also a theorem by Gérard and Sonner. I don't remember which year. 90-something. Which says the following. Assume that gamma t is a smooth codimension 2 mean curvature flow. And assume that, so the same initial energy bound, assume that mu star 0, say two things. First, assume that the support of mu star 0 is included in, so this say would be for t less than maximal time interval on which it is smooth, is included in gamma 0. Then the support of mu star t is included in gamma t. Okay, so this is true without any additional assumption on the initial data, without assuming that it is well prepared. It is well prepared in some sense because you assume that the support is included in this. But you at this level, you don't assume anything on the fact that it is topological or not. And this is based essentially on an idea of De Giorgi, which I have no time to speak about here, but I should mention here, idea of De Giorgi, regarding the square distance, the properties, and some PDE satisfied by the square distance to a manifold. And the second, which is the equivalent in higher dimension to this theorem, is that if mu star 0 is equal to pi times the n minus 2 hours of measure restricted on gamma 0, and also that mu star 0 as only topological part, so is well prepared in the sense that it is also the limit as epsilon goes to zero of the Jacobian of the initial data, so everything is topological, then what happens? Nu star t is equal pi times h n minus 2 restricted, so n minus 2 dimensional measure, house of measure restricted on gamma t. Okay, but this holds as long as singularity does not appear. I should mention also that it was also known for a long time, or at least expected for a long time, that convergence should be to a mean curvature flow. And I think there was some early papers based on the match asymptotics and by, let me see. So in a formal level, it was done by Rubinstein and Sternberg. Sternberg in 89, I think. If I'm not wrong.
I think it's more Rubinstein and Chisholm really good.
Sorry. I can. Sorry. Now, the first work on where singularities may be tackled was by Ambrosio and Sonner. So Ambrosio and Sonner in 97 proved the following. They assume, so the setting is always the same, eh? But under this condition, if you can prove that the limiting measure satisfying the following inequality, if you can prove that the n minus 2 upper n minus 2 density of, I'm just going to write what it means, of mu star t at x, which is defined as the lim sup as r goes to 0 of mu star t b x r over r n minus 2. If you can prove that this is bounded from below for almost all positive time, and this is important for mu star t almost every x in Rn, then mu star t seen as a collection of measures is a mean curvature flow in a weak sense. In a sense which was proposed by Brachy in 78. But I'm not going to enter into the details and to explain what is this sense. Just you can, so it is a definition of what should a family of measures satisfy in order to be considered the mean curvature flow. Those measures should be n minus 2 rectifiable, so this should look basically as n minus 2 dimensional manifolds. They should satisfy an inequality which for a smooth solution is an equality. So basically, Brachy has relaxed an inequality sign by an inequality 1. It is a very weak definition of a flow. Actually, Brachy did two things when he wrote his book. It was not on Ginzburg-Landau at that time. It was just on mean curvature flow. But he defined what is a solution of a Brachy flow. But he also constructed a solution which has much better properties than what he is asking for a family of measure to be a set of solutions. So this notion is very weak. Maybe I will come back to it later. But people seem to be happy with Brachy flows. So now maybe I should state the theorem that we have proved, not concerning convergence of blah blah blah, but the regularity properties of the measures, and this holds in any dimension n greater or equal to 2. And it says the following. First, there exists, you can, in the measure mu star t, you can single out a set sigma mu, which is closed in Rn times times what? Times 0 plus infinity. Okay. Well, second, there exists a function phi star, which is globally defined on Rn times R plus without zero. Third, now let me write sigma mu t being just the intersection of sigma mu with the slice, the time slice t, with so let me write it Rn times t. Then the measure mu star t can be exactly decomposed as one part, which is the gradient of phi star. I wrote it phi star squared. And this part is a diffuse part. So it is absolutely continuous with respect to Lebesgue measure. And another part, which is what is expected from previous analysis and so on in Ginzburg-Landau, say a density function of x and t times the n minus 2 Hausdorff measure restricted to sigma mu t. Okay, four. The function phi star, dt phi star minus Laplacian phi star is equal to 0. So phi star is a solution of the Eta equation. And finally, we have a density estimate. Let's say that the set sigma mu t is n minus 2 rectifiable . So I should add for almost every t positive, and the density theta n minus 2 of what, of mu star t at x is greater than eta. Actually, we need a time dependence, and we cannot remove it because there are some counterexamples. So this is true for almost every t positive. And for hn minus 2 restricted to sigma mu t x in Rn. Okay, so now let me comment a little bit on this theorem. Basically, it means the following. Yes. So what you should have in mind is, so this is time, this is Rn. Okay, you have your initial vortex line, okay, and it is going to evolve according to mean curvature flow, and this will be sigma mu t. Okay, but as I said, with just the initial, the assumption being just an energy bound, at the initial time you can have much more than just a very nice vortex line. You can have diffuse energy here. You can have Dirac masses. Okay. And what the theorem tells you is that after evolution, there may just remain two things in the energy. One, which is the one you expect for vortices, is one part which is n minus two dimensional, this one. So this is the concentrated part of the energy. And what is left is a diffuse energy which may survive at positive times. But this part has to be absolutely continuous with respect to Lebesgue measure. And it is also related to the heat equation, because you see it's gradient phi star squared, and phi star is satisfying the heat equation. Okay? Eta is positive, but it may blow up as time goes to zero. Okay. So what? In dimension 2, for example, let's go back to dimension 2. This theorem is stated in the original time scale. So imagine now that in dimension 2, you start with data, which is you have some nice vortices, but you add some oscillation of the phase. Okay? Now what's going to happen, and this theorem tells you what's going to happen, is that the phase that you have added in an artificial way is going to evolve basically along according to the heat equation. So if the phase was concentrated, the energy is for the L2 norm. If the L2 norm is concentrated, the L1 norm is going to zero. And the L1 norm is conserved by the heat equation. It tells you that this phase is going, even if it's not concentrated. The phase is evolving at the original time scale according to the heat equation. So it's going to vanish in the original time scale. So if you come back to the time scale, to the 1 over log epsilon time scales at which vortices are moving in this time scale, you will not see this. It means that if you have some phase or some oscillation of the phase at the zero time, this phase is going to vanish in the time 1 scale, and in the 1 over log epsilon scale, you will not see it. So even if you start with non-well-prepared initial data, it will become a well-prepared initial data in zero time in this time scale, okay, asymptotically. Okay. So the other good news, well, the bad news is that this assumption here is unmet in general. And the reason for this, even if it looks very much the same, the reason is this, okay, and this, because if your measure nu star t has some part which is not of n minus 2 dimension, this is not met, because at those points where you have diffuse energy, this is equal to zero, okay? Nevertheless, what we proved, and so this is the other theorem, is that this part, so define nu star t, you just take the n minus 2 part of the measure, so equal to theta of xt, the h n minus 2 restricted to sigma mu t. This evolves, then the family nu star t evolves by mean curvature flow in the sense of Brocky. Okay, so it means that the presence of this diffuse part in the energy does not perturb the vortices. It could have been a priori that putting oscillating phases would change the motion of the vortices, and actually it doesn't. And on a mathematical point, the reason for this is that this global phase here, we are able to define it globally in Rn cross R plus. It is easy to define it away from the vortices because there you have a smoothing effect of the equations and so on. But you can prove that actually this phi star, this limiting phase, is defined even across the concentrating set. Okay, so in the 3 minutes that I'm left with, I would like to mention another result, and related to this strong non-uniqueness flavor in the Brackey flow. See, as I told you, a Brackey flow is defined by an inequality. And assume, for example, that you put all of the energy in the phase, as I show you at the start, with taking u epsilon 0 being the exponential of I phi, blah, blah, blah. And so that the initial energy is concentrated on a circle. Okay, you would expect, because you know what mean curvature flow is, that this circle is going to shrink with time. But this is not going to be the case if you construct your initial concentrating measure this way, just because you just put phase. If u epsilon has modulus equal to 1, if you look at the equation, at the Ginzburg-Landau equation reduces to the heat equation when modulus of u is equal to 1. So if you construct this with just a phase, then it's going to evolve with the heat flow. And if this was a limit of L2 norm, the L1 norm was 0, and so the circle is going to pop up immediately, which means at any positive time the limit would be 0. So it's not the solution that you would like to pick. And actually, it's not a drawback of the analysis. It's just that if you start with such kind of initial condition, that's what's happening. So you would like a notion of a mean curvature flow which does not admit those kinds of behavior. And this was defined by Ilmanen. So there is the notion of motion of Ilmanen, and this is very much related with all those works, and I would call Gerard Sonner work. What's the problem? Okay, on the Jacobians, Ilmanen said, okay, I'm considering a mean curvature flow as being an enhanced mean curvature flow if in some sense below this family of measure I can put something which has more structure than a measure and which is a current, an integer multiplicity current. So in some sense, you allow a little bit more than just the motion of a current, but you assume an inequality. So you assume that your measures are above a current. And this is very much related to all what you already have listened about Jacobians, which are dominated by the energy. So if you assume, I will not say the theorem, but basically it says the following. If you assume that, as in all the previous theorems I quoted by Gerard and Sonner, if you assume that at time zero, not only the measure is converging to mu star zero, but that the Jacobians do the same, then it is an enhanced motion. And you have, for example, that if you start with a circle, if you have a smooth solution, then your solution corresponds with the smooth solution. Okay, I will stop here. Thank you.